Well, good morning all, and it's good for us to be here with no small number. I was planning last week to do the exhortation when I knew the brother couldn't come, and then Tim Crawley appeared on the scene, so that was really nice. So I had some thoughts prepared for last Sunday, and Si and I had also swapped about a month ago too, so I had some thoughts for this Sunday prepared. So I'm going to join the two together, and hopefully it won't be too disjointed for you. So firstly, in Luke chapter 11, in today's reading, Jesus has some quite telling words for us in verse 21 and 22. And he says, it's like a little mini parable. When a strong man armed keeps his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come upon him and overcome him, he taketh from him all his armour wherein he trusteth, and divided his spoils. And so the strong man, we learn, is a king, and by strength of arm he maintains control over both his palace and his possessions. But the problem is, there is always someone, somewhere, somehow, who is stronger than he. The stronger one attacks, overpowers him, and carries off all his goods and the armour that he so trusted in. And here is the key, I think, to the story, this parable. The king trusted his armour. It was his defence, his ability that he relied on to keep both his palace and his possessions safe. And suddenly, the stronger one breaks through, and all that he had treasured and kept safe is gone. Who is this attacker? Who is the stronger one who overcomes the king to take all he has? Well, there's lots of thoughts, but my thoughts are that the stronger one is sin and death itself. The power of the grave is always our great enemy, always stronger than us, despite our status, even as a king. Our great possessions, our strong armour, and death itself will always conquer us, and all that we have will be lost. And so this explanation perhaps is borne out by the, if you like, two bookends that are either side of this parable. The first bookend is in that verse 14, where Jesus is healing the man that is speechless, dumb. And that's verse 17. We just want to pick up that thought there. But Jesus, knowing their thoughts, said unto them, every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and a house divided against a house falls. And that's because the Jews have been saying, well, look, he's doing this miracle by the power of Beelzebub. And Jesus says, well, actually, no, that's a kingdom is divided against itself, cannot stand. A divided house, a divided kingdom will collapse. It will be destroyed. And perhaps it will collapse from the inside out. Two factions in the house fighting over the same thing, such that the two destroy themselves. And I think Jesus' caution for all of us is clear. If a household or a kingdom is divided, it cannot stand. It will certainly fall. And of course, a warning for all of us, brothers and sisters in the ecclesia, is to stand united. We can have different opinions and thoughts, true, but in the end, we need to be divided and certain of the kingdom of God and the return of Jesus, and the need to have each other in the house, in the kingdom. So both God and Jesus are united in their wanting there to be healing on the earth. Jesus came to prove that God was wanting to help people, and he sent Jesus to heal them and to help them to be free from sin. And of course, Jesus had just demonstrated this desire to help by casting out this dumb spirit in verse 14. And yet some accused Jesus, as I said, of healing by the power of something other than God. They sought to undermine Jesus' power and authority, to divide the house, as it were. However, we know that both Father and Son are one in purpose to deliver us from sin and death. The house of God, the kingdom of God, is not divided. It will always stand and never be overcome. So that's one book into this little parable of the strong man. The other one is in verse 23, where Jesus says, he that is not with me is against me, and he that gathers not with me scattereth. And And here it is from the Message Bible. This is war, and there is no neutral ground. If you're not on my side, you're the enemy. If you're not helping, you're making things worse. And that's his sort of little translation of that. But we need to be certain that we're not against Jesus, that we're for him. Are we, as a body, helping to keep the household of God united, to encourage trust in God and not in our palace, not in our own armour, and not in our own ability? Death is going to take all of us away one day. It is stronger and more powerful than any armour of our own that we choose to trust in. But thanks be to God that he has shown us that he alone has power over death and the grave. And I just want to take you briefly to Acts chapter 2, where I think this is shown so clearly to us by the Apostle Peter, that God has power over the grave and death itself. And just pick up a couple of verses in Acts chapter 2. Peter, speaking on the day of Pentecost, says in verse 22 of Acts 2, "Men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as ye yourselves also know, him being delivered by the determined counsel and foreknowledge of God, you have taken, and by wicked hands have crucified and slain, whom God had raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be held by it." So there it is in very clear terms that God has the power. God is stronger than the death that we face, that Jesus faced, and the grave. Verse 22, Jesus was approved by God, the united house in helping people. Verse 23, God gave Jesus to you in a determined plan. It was always God's purpose to send a son. It was a determined plan and purpose of God. However, Peter says, you took Jesus, this lovely man, God sent to help people, and you destroyed him. But God's purpose cannot be changed, in verse 24, and so God raised up Jesus. Death is no match for God. It was impossible for the grave to hold Jesus. So let's just summarise those little thoughts from at least from Luke chapter 11 before we move on. Despite any and all plans that we make, one day death is going to conquer us. Death is the strong man. Knowing this, will our trust be in strength, our ability, and the armour we have? Or will it be on God, who has demonstrated that he is more powerful than both death and the grave? The resurrection of Jesus is proof to all that God is able and willing to give life. We are each called to belong to the house of God, to be citizens of his kingdom. A house and a kingdom that is divided cannot stand, but we know that God's kingdom will stand forever. Now I just want to take you back to Psalm 121, which was the reading for last Sunday. And from Psalm 120 to 134, they're all called the Songs of Degrees or Songs of Ascents. And some of them are attributed to David, some are attributed to Solomon, and the rest have no author. Like Reagan said, Psalm 120 and 121 are both have no title. They're just a Song of Degrees, whereas Psalm 122, for example, is a Song of Degrees of David. And it suggests that the Psalms with no title to them as a Song of Degree are to do with Hezekiah, or Hezekiah's work at least. And I just want you to think about Psalm 121 in that sense, as we spend just a little bit of time thinking about the story of Hezekiah and the trials and troubles that he faced. And this is something that Jeff mentioned in an email that we had back to the fourth, but Psalm 121 is a question. I will lift up mine eyes to the hills, from whence comes my help? And that's the question. Will I lift up my eyes to the hills? Doesn't my help come from the hills? No, verse 2. My help comes from the Lord which made heaven and earth. And interestingly, that word help there in verse 1 and verse 2 is the same word that is describing the provision of Eve to Adam, that God was going to give Adam a help meet or help fitting for Adam. And that's the same word here, help. So God is seen by the writer of this psalm as the help that he needed. Everything was right and wonderful. God was going to provide that. My help doesn't come from the hills. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. And I just want you to think about good King Hezekiah standing on the walls of Jerusalem, looking out over the valley below him and the vast Assyrian army that had gathered there, and just pondering these things. Is it to the hills that I look for help? That's what my father Ahaz did. He looked to the hills. He looked to the nations around him to help him in times of distress. And Hezekiah was firm in his resolve. No, I'm going to trust in the Lord who made heaven and earth. So, just with those thoughts, if we come over to Isaiah 36, and that's the story, at least of Hezekiah's life as Isaiah is giving it to us. It's interesting that three places in the Old Testament particularly describe the life of Hezekiah. I mean, it's normal for Kings and Chronicles to do that because he was a king, but Isaiah particularly wants us to focus on Hezekiah as well, and so there's some real important lessons from his life. So, in chapter 36 of Isaiah, we learn that the Assyrian army is one of the two great dilemmas that face King Hezekiah in his life. And if you like, thinking back to Luke 11, here is the strong man who threatens Hezekiah. It came to pass in the 14th year of the King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the defense cities of Judah and took them. So all around Jerusalem has been captured by the Sennacherib, king of Assyria, and all that's left in the land is Jerusalem, the last stronghold, and Hezekiah is there in Jerusalem. And I just want to pick up a flavour of what the threat involved, and look at what this Sennacherib, through one of his officers, says in verse 14 of chapter 36. Thus saith the king, this is the king of Assyria, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you, neither Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord will surely deliver us. This city will not be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. Don't listen to Hezekiah, hearken not to him, for thus saith the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and eat ye every one of his vine, and every one of his fig tree, and drink ye every one the waters of his own system. And I'm going to take you away to a land like your own, a land of corn and wine, a land of bread and vineyards. It's sort of a promise of a better life, isn't it? But here is a mixture that the officer of the king is giving, a mixture of lies, a mixture of truth. It's pure propaganda. It's certainly trying to undermine Hezekiah. Don't let him tell you God is going to deliver you. That's the message that he's saying. So Hezekiah is a strong man. He's king in Jerusalem. And yet, there is a stronger than he standing outside the walls with his army of 185,000 soldiers. Hezekiah is armed. Hezekiah has great possessions. But unlike the man in Luke chapter 11, he does not rely on any of these in the face of this great Assyrian king, his enemy. He rather relies on the God of Israel, the maker of heaven and earth. And that's shown to us in verse 1 to 3 of the next chapter, 37. So when Hezekiah heard it, or heard the threats of the officer, he rent his clothes, covered himself with sackcloth, and went to the house of the Lord. And he sends off Eliakim and Shebna to Isaiah the prophet, son of Amoz. And they said to him, this is to Isaiah, thus says Hezekiah, This day is a day of trouble and of rebuke and of blasphemy. The children are come to the birth, and there is not strength to bring forth. Hezekiah understood just how big a threat the Assyrian king was and his army. And so he sends off a delegation to Isaiah. And God comes back to Hezekiah with this message in verse 6 and 7. Isaiah said to the officers, "Thus shall you say to your master, thus saith the Lord, be not afraid of the words that you have heard, wherewith the servants of the king of Assyria blaspheme. Behold, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumour, and return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land." And we could say that the strong man has retreated, and he did. But the battle is not yet over. And the Assyrians are not yet done with Hezekiah. And Hezekiah receives another death threat from the Assyrians. And this time it's in a letter. And the letter is in verse 10 of chapter 37. "Thus shall you speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah, saying, let not thy God in whom you trust deceive you, saying, Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria." And he goes on in this big tirade. "Haven't you heard what I've done in other lands? I've destroyed them. I've taken them away. Were their gods able to help them? What makes you think that your God is going to help you, Hezekiah?" And Hezekiah takes this threat, this letter, and he does what all godly men do. He went up in verse 14 and he spread it out before the Lord. He laid out the letter. However, he laid out his problem before God and he prayed to God and said, verse 16, "Lord of hosts, God of Israel, you that dwell between the cherubims, you are God, you alone of all the kingdoms of the earth." And he goes on in his quite long prayer to say, this man is a threat to you, God. He's ridiculing you, not me. And so I want you to notice that Hezekiah didn't rely on his own strength or his own defences or even the promise that he just received back in verse 6 that the king of Assyria would die in his own land. He spreads it out before God. His help came from God, not from the hills. And it was just one angel of God that comes, and we know the outcome. God sends an angel in verse 36, just one, and into the camp of the Assyrians, and 185,000 men are dead by the morning. What a remarkable delivery. And God is demonstrating, of course, that he is stronger than any threat that would come upon his people. So I mentioned there are two great dilemmas that face Hezekiah in his life. The strong man number two now shows up. First one we had was the Assyrian king and his army. The next one is the terminal illness, the fact that affects Hezekiah. And it's in verse 1 of chapter 38. "In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death." He's terminally ill. Isaiah, the son of Amoz, comes to him and says, "Thus saith the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live." And this isn't just a doctor's diagnosis that you've got a terminal illness. This is God's diagnosis. You are going to die, Hezekiah. And we could ask the question, in those days, Hezekiah was sick to death, and we say, well, what days? And if you do a little bit of flipping backwards and forwards in the Kings and the Chronicles record, you can work out that Hezekiah ruled for 29 years. And just come back, if you don't mind, to verse 1 of 36. Came to pass in the 14th year. So halfway through his reign, God says to Hezekiah, you're going to die and not live. And Hezekiah prays, and we know that God answers the prayer and says, I'm going to add to your years 15 years. So 14 years from 15 makes 29, which is Hezekiah's reign. So pretty much when the Assyrians are camped outside the walls of Jerusalem, Hezekiah is on his deathbed. He can't do anything. And just when Israel need him to be there as their strong king, he's struck down with this illness. So the people of Jerusalem perhaps were crushed in their hope. The man that they most needed to lead them to put some bone into their spine, some backbone, was on his deathbed. So here is a strong man of death about to visit Hezekiah. But again, he doesn't rely on his own strength. He relies on the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. And in verse 2, Hezekiah turns, or chapter 38, turns his face to the wall and prays to God and says, "Remember now, O Lord, I beseech thee, how I've walked before you in truth and with a perfect heart and done that which is good in your sight." And Hezekiah wept sore. And in a sense, to summarise, he's saying, this work that I've started in Jerusalem with your people to bring them to faith, to bring them to you, Father, is only partway finished. Just remember the work. And God says to him, remarkably through Isaiah, in verse 5, "I have heard your prayer, I've seen your tears. Behold, I'll add to your days 15 years, and I will deliver you and the city out of the hand of the king of Assyria." So God's acknowledging that these two great threats all at once happened in his life. God once more intervenes in the battle between Hezekiah and the strong man of death, and proves that God is God of heaven and earth. So in conclusion then, in always on the horizon for each of us, there is a strong man, or something stronger than we are, that will confront us and want to conquer us. For Hezekiah, it was the Assyrian army and terminal illness. Each of us are called to evaluate our own lives and consider the many things that challenge us. It could be many things, including sickness. It will definitely involve sin and death. But what would our response be? At the moment, each of us have time to evaluate and make plans about what we will do in response. Let us, like Hezekiah, look to God as our help, the maker of heaven and earth, who will deliver us. And of course, naturally speaking, we all want to rely on our ability, on our armour and our strength to help us through. But God, on the same hand, wants us to do the same with him. He wants us to rely on him for help. He alone can and will deliver us. Verse 5 of chapter 38 of Isaiah, God says, "I've heard your prayer, I've seen your tears." And he gives an answer. "This is what I'm going to do." 15 years. It may not have been what Hezekiah wanted, but he's going to take that. He's not going to die. He's got 15 more years. It was 15 years of life and deliverance from the king of Assyria. And for Jesus himself in the Garden of Gethsemane, facing the strong man of suffering and death, it was an angel that was sent from heaven by God that gave Jesus an encouragement to keep desiring God's will. We know that Jesus alone in the Garden of Gethsemane prayed, and his sweat was like great drops of blood falling to the ground. And is there any other way, Father, that we can accomplish the salvation of Israel? Is there any other way? Nevertheless, not what I want, but what you want. And so Jesus is giving up his will to that of the Father. And God sent an angel, not to destroy like in the time of the Assyrians, but to encourage and to strengthen Jesus. And so let us likewise look to our Maker as we face the many and varied trials and temptations in our lives, as we come now to remember Jesus together.